Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
Professional sports and amateur sports like college basketball and college football are exploitive. Athletes are workers. Should players decertify or dissolve their unions and start their own leagues? This is a hypothetical discussion. It's not based on labor law or any understanding of the intricacies of the current collective bargaining agreements in various leagues. Kyrie Irving, who is a player on the New Jersey Nets of the NBA and was recently elected vice president of the NBA union in February, recently allegedly suggested that NBA players could start their own league. I'm about to read a quote from a CBS article on the topic. Quote, the idea behind players starting their own league, presumably, would be separating the talent and potential wealth generation of those superstars who are largely African-American from the institutions that typically profit off of that talent, which would specifically be the mostly white team owners. There's been no reporting to this point suggesting that other players are interested in Irving's idea. Here's why NBA players and other athletes in other sports should take this idea seriously.
Oh my God, this is one of the greatest statements that has come out of labor in a long time. I don't even know how else to say this, but to get back that the worker themselves is working under exploitation is probably one of the most radical statements that we've heard coming out of unions a very long time. And this is up against things like the CFL, AFL. This is up against things like the UAW. This is a very radical statement. And coming from us, this is a beautiful gift. This is something that should be done immediately because we have seen exploitation and exploitation from every league and every major sport because it is designed to hold those with money and power in power and basically exploit the labors of others. And you see this, and we'll just get into sort of the sad stories in which players are not set up for success or set up for failure. They're set up to be in the limelight. They're set up to have their money taken from them and not given the way that they can, you know, persist outside the league. They're basically exploited until their labor is no longer needed. And then they're either cut from the team or retired.
I mean, they get paid a lot, so let's not feel too weepy for them either.
Oh yeah, no. But let's just also say that that poster that's in most high schools about like the 1 in 255,000 go pro or whatever that number is means that these individuals have spent their entire lives preparing for these days. So it's a mixture of talent and dedication and just good genes, right? Because those that make it are healthy, and those in the end are the ones that survive through the health. So it's whether or not they were protected as a quarterback or whether or not they just had good genes and made it through. But a lot of people along the way fell. And this is where having your own league allows for things like minor leagues to be actually designed to help players move to the next level and not just look for the next superstars. It means that you're not going to force your running backs in the NFL to take sustained hit after hit after hit because it's player driven and not profit driven. And so everything that designed right now in the major leagues, and this is talking even the NBA, is designed around profits. So how do you get the most viewership? How do you get most people to show up? How do you exploit the worker, the viewer, everybody? And so let's sort of talk about the hierarchy of exploitation here. So the first thing we should know is that these leagues are owned by wealthy people. And they've done everything they can to craft labor law, bonds and taxes to make them profitable. So things like having a special sales tax in, let's say, a major city in order to cover the cost of a stadium is exploitation to anybody that works and lives there and shops there because it's covering the cost of the stadium, which also means that they have passed laws in order to have ordinances. So you can't park on the streets at certain times. So you have special parade routes that go through. You have more infrastructure to handle the number of cars that come in. And you have exploitation coming all the way down from the people who staff these large, I guess, white elephants, right? Buildings that serve no purpose except for to make money off of the working class.
They are monuments to private industry.
They are beautiful monuments to private industry that serve no actual function beyond just entertainment, right? The people that work there are exploited. They're paid low wages. But the people that go to these games are exploited because they have to buy a $10 hot dog and it's $12 beer night.
Unless you're in Atlanta.
Right.
And you get those sweet premium pricing so you can watch your teams choke it away at the end.
Yeah, at the end. Atlanta. So there, I mean, there you have it. We can go down from everybody to the exploitation of just the players themselves, and we can keep wandering down this path of exploitation to the ticket people that get tickets from you, the ticket holders, and even the fact that leagues love ticket scalpers, right? How do you fill an empty stadium? You let someone else take the risk, buy a bunch of tickets, and try to sell them at whatever risk and loss profit they have. Now, that's capitalism in a nutshell, but it is still exploited to the person on the street that's trying to gain some money from sort of the failures of your team. And there's even like all types of services that you see that's exploitive. You see like the poor dishwashers who have to wash a bunch of dishes for chuds who want to come in and drink beer and eat wings before the games or sit at the sports and watch them. And the poor people that have to stand around and make sure your cars don't get broken into in those off lots because you decided to pay $5 to park instead of $30 to get premium parking.
Or the stadium was built in the absolute, I'm going to say, undesirable area of town because you didn't want to spend money. You wanted to buy up some vacant lots and attempt to gentrify an area because you're spending billions and billions of dollars on the surrounding real estate because you want to build a suite hotel so that you can have big, fancy, rich people come in and set boxes at your stadium and leave in the first quarter and not even watch the game. But that's all under the guise of taxpayer-funded transfers of wealth to these large franchises.
So every step of the way, it is designed to extract money from the worker and give it to the billionaire class because we all want to be entertained because most of us work a ton of time and hours and needs an escape. And it actually is beneficial to watch these sports games, but it shouldn't be at a cost in which you can't afford to actually partake and enjoy them because somebody else is exploiting you. And for a lot of people that are serving you, or serving the interests of the people that are there, they don't actually get to enjoy the things they're serving because they have no way of paying for it. And so I love this idea of making it worker-owned. Take the worker, let the worker own the means of production. In this case, it is their talent. And there's a lot of things that happen here. LeBron James has so much money coming in, he could start his own team and literally pick and choose who he wants to come in and then do profit sharing. All the things that we see in the same neoliberal ideas of how we can sort of get rid of capitalism, LeBron James can come in and pick talent. And not only can he pick talent, he has the ability to fund through super funding, and the same thing, stadium building. Ask for bonds or just do sharing of stadium space with other things that exist, like a university. And this idea that they can actually have a change is super exciting. In fact, this is one of the most exciting things, again, that I've heard in such a long time, that you can take the talent, the 95% that own, you know, that actually make the energy or do the sport itself and own the music production is incredible. And what do we see all the time in these contracts? I mean, the NFL or the NHL has locked out their players multiple times because what's the problem? In the NHL contracts, the players want more money. Why? Because they're the means of production. They're the ones that get the shit beat out of them every time they're on the ice. They're the ones like the NBA that they want 55% or 65% of all profits. Why? Because it's their bodies that are being destroyed. So the question then is, why do the owners get 45% if they've done nothing and contributed nothing? And it is the same corollaries that we see under capitalism for the worker. You show up every day, you beat your body up, you do roofing every day. It's not you that makes the money. It's the owner of the company, even though they've done nothing to help out the company itself.
It's surplus value they have being extracted from workers.
It's surplus value. Thank you. That's the theory. And part of this is great discussion because now we get to actually talk about real theory, right? The worker, like let's say in the NBA, that's generating, they're making $8 million a year, but how much money are they actually generating by being on the court? It has to be more than that, or they wouldn't be employed as someone in the basketball. It also means that someone riding the bench is getting paid way less money, even though they're an important feature, right? They're the bench person that comes out and gives a break to the quote unquote superstar enables that team to still be successful because they're still on the court making it. But if they're only getting paid $500,000 a year, but the superstar is making $8 million a year, you can see there's a sort of surplus value change there, right? There's an actual exploitation that's happening just from the bench players. And then that means, how does a billionaire make money off of this? That means they're generating billions of dollars in revenue way in excess of what they're paying the players.
So if I'm LeBron James or I'm any other collection of well-paid superstar NBA athletes, and there are a number of them, the NBA is very well paying. It's arguably the most I'm going to say the P word, progressive sports league currently. The game of basketball has a team size of roughly, you know, 10 or so people, whereas an NFL team, you know, it's 60-ish. So there's a relatively few number of players per team generating this revenue. So on average, any given NBA player is kind of more highly compensated than your average football player. So the NBA has an opportunity here where many of the actual players are very well compensated. So they have money to sort of take on the risk associated with folding their current union, if that's plausible, and creating a new sports league. So if they were to do this, what would be some of the public benefit that would arise from doing this? Well, we talked a little bit about the massive kind of taxpayer-funded stadiums that are effectively donated to the NBA, to the owners of NBA teams or any other sports league. You see, NFL stadiums are largely the most expensive because they generally have a higher capacity. NBA and NHL are roughly the same size. Baseball stadiums are kind of on par with the NFL, and they really have no applicability for any other sport because they're this weird diamond shape. Then you have MLS stadiums, which are, I mean, some of them are football stadiums, so there is some reuse, so that's a good thing. But MLS kind of has different requirements, little smaller stadiums, actual grass, the field's a little bit wider. So these are all stadiums that are largely built with public dollars. And if the NBA were to, say, not exist and the players existed, there's no reason why we couldn't have these leagues with existing infrastructure. Like, large colleges, large universities generally have public stadiums, and especially for basketball, where they're relatively small in comparison to football, you could literally rent a college stadium or perhaps just build shared facilities. There's less overhead, and you would still be able to put the product on the field that would not exploit the workers, creating the surplus value for these billionaires that effectively create and dictate rules that affect your employment.
Yeah, it's actually kind of an interesting schism in mentality here, because there are sports in other countries that have a much different view on what sports are. And so you take a look at soccer stadiums across the world, in which you have city leagues and you have country leagues and you have premier leagues, but they in general share stadium space, and they have a buildup of different tiers so that you can actually have some minor leagues that allow players to come up and come and go as needed. So you can build a base of actual followers and you can build a base of actual players. And you miss that here in the United States, because what we've done is we've started the exploitation of colleges as if that's how the future is built for the sports. And so we're not going to go too much into college sports and the exploitation there, but just know that the college sports, the way that it's structured now, is designed to be the minor leagues of major sports. And if we can remove that aspect of it, then we can begin to move into what colleges and things are for, which are for education. And the question then becomes is what other benefits do we have? And that is, we have sort of autonomy for our own brothers and sisters on the court any other fields that allow them to make financial decisions, not based on, you know, how much money they're making or where they're going to be at, but whether or not their body is capable of still performing. And you've seen that a lot in the NFL right now, where people are beginning to retire at an earlier age because they made enough money to survive without actually having the long-term effects. And so sports injuries can go down. We can actually share, I guess, that burden for entertainment. And we still have the superstars that come out, but we won't have as many sort of prolonged degenerative diseases coming out of these sports leagues, because individuals can make, again, those financial decisions earlier in their careers.
So as athletes kind of progress through the season each year, in the NBA, they play 82 games and they play, you know, some number of playoff rounds, depending on how well their team does, how many games each series goes to. There's some schedule compaction where you play back to backs. There's a lot of travel. Certain teams endure more of a rigorous travel schedule, like Teams in the Midwest have to travel to both coasts, which kind of increases the amount of air travel they have. And this is all designed around scheduling and optimizing TV revenue. It's not optimized around being efficient or minimizing sort of risk or utilization of resources like airports. Not that the NBA is impacting like the national air travel system or anything like that, but it's generally inefficient. From a player doesn't want to go to one city, go to another city, fly, 4,000 miles across the country, play a game. It results in a poor quality product as well. You see certain teams like the San Antonio Spurs, Greg Popovich, the coach, will intentionally rest players on certain games back to back. They're called, scheduled losses or there's another term like workout management or something. I want to think of it, but it doesn't matter. And so you have all of these pieces don't really contribute to the quality of the game or the quality of anything. They contribute to the quality of the profit. And you see this kind of in the NFL as well recently, where they expanded the schedule to 17 games. There's been talk about, the baseball season is too long. It's not a great product when the season just drags on and on and on and on. I think there's an issue with the NHL being too long in terms of the number of games, but the number of games is predicated on TV revenues and how long the season can hold the interest of potential viewers. So it's a case where if it was athlete run, you might see an entirely different paradigm where you don't actually potentially have teams associated with the locales. And that kind of eats into the whole tribalism of sports where my team is the best team and I only follow my team because I like my team because it's my team. Affiliation with a team is largely predicated on locality, which is kind of implies your ability to watch the team. And so it just speaks to kind of familiarity. So there's no reason why you couldn't have, let's say like a roving group of, 100 NBA players. And they like tour the country and go from one city to the next. They're all on the same kind of like league unit, but they have their own teams internally at any given physical site. Let's say they play 8 games and then they all move on collectively. Like that's better utilization of resources. Everybody gets to watch. It's better for the players. There's not this separation of like my team and your team. It's just like for the love of whatever the sport is. It's not tribal. You don't have to have duplicative like medical care where team A has an entire medical staff and team B has an entire medical staff. You would just have one medical staff and they would all be concerned with the well-being of all players. They don't have to care about TV revenues or when the games are played for like maximizing viewership. You just play whenever the players kind of want to play within some scheduled, this doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but there would have to be a schedule, but it doesn't have to be driven by profit. It would be driven by kind of optimal playing conditions. You could work in minor league games. You could do different things than this, my team versus your team. And it's on at 7 PM. On Tuesdays because that's arbitrary sports ball day.
Yeah, and that gets into why they have blackout days and why it is regional, right? And that's all market size. And they don't move teams unless you're going to Las Vegas, unless you are of a certain market size. And that's, again, for ad revenue and filling up the seats. And so everything, there are states that we know of that are basically without any type of professional sports, or they don't have all 4 or 5, whatever you want to call it, professional sports, because there's not enough people in those areas to actually drive viewership locally. And there's also this idea that under capitalism, you can't grow unless it's global, which is why you see certain international games, because they can bring in a lot more revenue if it's being streamed and advertisement revenue is being sold in those international spaces and bring in more viewerships internationally. So everything is predicated on selling advertisement and selling things in the stadium. So how else do you bring in more money? Well, you limit the amount of people that can actually watch all the games. And so you sell things like sports packages. And so now you're charging someone $250 to see all the sports and all the games. Then what else you do? You only limit to major broadcasting certain important games. And then you let things like ESPN or TNT, these off-label channels, have all of these sports broadcasts. And that requires then for you to buy a higher subscription on your cable package, which then limits the amount of viewership that can be done over the air, which then cuts off major poor population who cannot view these games. And then you do other exploitive things, like, again, you have your holiday games that are supposed to be more enjoyable for the fans, but all it's doing is bringing in more ad revenue, which is going to the bottom line. It's not going to the players. It's going to the profits of the major broadcasters like ESPN, ABC, NBC, all the big ones, because they can bring in more money to those games. So you have the outset games, the NHL. You're going to have the international games, the NFL, and all the special sports games. You have the holiday games, the NBA. You have all the right. You have all the March Madness.
Because people absolutely want to watch Jacksonville play the Cleveland Browns in London or England or Wembley or whatever stupid ass thing the NFL has decided they need to do at 8 a.m. on Saturday once a week.
You want to watch Detroit and Dallas, I guess, lose on Thanksgiving Day. You want to watch you're going to wake up on Christmas and want to watch NBA games. I mean, it might be fun for a player once, right, to have that feeling, right, to walk in a stadium and have that game. But I mean, it seems like it's odd that you're forcing these upon players on days that majority of the population is going to hold sacred, whether or not you're religious or not. You hold those days, at least you're not going to have to go to work. But these workers have to go to work to give some sort of entertainment to those that are not working, servicing the wealthy.
And then you have all the like auxiliary service workers that also have to work on those days.
That's right. Oh, you're forced to come in to work. Why? Because we'll fire you if you don't work. And so you get to drive 45 minutes to come in to make $10 an hour. You don't have any profit sharing.
Because every worker has to drive 45 minutes.
Or park somewhere crazy, right? I mean, I've never worked in a stadium, so I don't know, honestly, if there's an employee parking. But I'm guessing that parking is probably reserved for the fans. So I really don't know if there's a shuttle system. Anybody knows that, you can email us at podcastworkmovie.com. But I don't know the ecosystem inside of there. I've only ever been there to buy and exploit the worker that's there. The few times I ever went to a major sports game. And so, you know, you have some podcasters here who have all grown up under capitalism. So, you know, material conditions require us to partake in that. But we do spend as much time as we can fighting for the worker. So when we say things like this, like we went there to exploit, it's in jest, but we do understand what the exploitation is, because we are exploited just like you every single day.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with liking sports and attending sports and liking sports, but there is an element of it is exploitive, but everything's exploitive under capitalism. So
yeah, there's no ethical consumption, everybody. So that's another piece that you should know for theory-wise. So it's really important to know that we, as people that love sports, love this idea of taking it back, right? It, you know, there's one sports team that sort of owns its own, or one city that owns its own sports team, and that's Green Bay, and they can lose every game if they could make us happy. But at least they are owned by a city. And so there's a less of a profit-driven motive there for everything. So you can see this in everywhere you look in sports teams, right? The fact that they're going to expand the stadium, what do they expand first? The boxes, the box seats, right? And what do they try to sell you? They try to sell you season ticket passes. Why? Because it's guaranteed people in the seats. And who do they give preference to? Right, the season ticket holders. Why? Because they know you're going to show up every game. You know they're going to pull out of you the $40 hot dog package. You get a pop and a one hot dog and a bag of shitty Lay's chips. Actually, I like Lay's chips.
Frito-Lay's Corporation chips.
Yes, thank you. Not the plain white, not the plain yellow bags. Still like them though. Not sponsored by them, by any means. But if they want to sponsor the show, all right, we'll do it. So again, this podcast came up relatively fast for us because we are seeing this momentum, and it's a question about what's the worker going to do now. And there's not, again, a lot of movement on the left. But seeing that there is somebody who is actually taking into worker relations into the actual sports arena is fantastic. And for us, it's this idea that every – go ahead.
We should also be clear that Kyrie Irving isn't perhaps the brightest player on the earth. In fact, he believes that the earth is flat. So
yeah, so that's let's take a step back of who our idols are and who our people that we look up to are, but just know that at least this, even if it was unintentional statement, and even if it's bullshit, and CBS is just reporting nonsense for some reason, some sort of psyops, right? There's no reason this couldn't be a way to try to scare the union or breed divisions within the union or things that are actually for the landowner or for the team owners to actually try to break the union themselves and renegotiate contracts. So there's just potentially that element. But this is actually a really interesting intersection between what's happening right now in the protests and sort of the workers that are being oppressed daily, our COVID-19 essential worker slaves, that we should say, who are forced every day to go into work because they have they're paid by the hour, and they're forced to go do food service for individuals who don't give a shit about them. And then also individuals who are being paid high dollars but are knowing themselves are being exploited. There's more money to either be made or distributed. And it's really important that we understand that individuals who are in the millionaire class, who are willing to turn their back in the millionaire class and fight the other millionaires, are beautiful class traders that we need on our side in a way that you don't see every day. And it's because of this exploitation that it kind of binds us all together.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.